This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about books and the publishing industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today, I'm talking to Brian Birnbaum. He's one of the founders of Dead Rabbits Publishing. Although Dead Rabbits has more than just books in what it does. How are you, Brian?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So, you know, there are lots of people start publishing, you know, for lots of reasons. But you guys have been doing a reading series called Dead Rabbits in New York City for a number of years. Maybe you could talk about that, the Dead Rabbits reading series before, because that's kind of the thing that you're best known for up to now.
Yeah. So, funny enough, I'm actually not officially a member of the Dead Rabbits reading series, like hosts. My partner in life and in business for the Dead Rabbits publishing company, Katie Rainey, and my old roommate, Devin Kelly, with whom I went to Sarah Lawrence College for my MFA with both of them. They started it back in 2014, I believe. And the idea kind of hit them when I think Devin was watching the movie Gangs of New York, the Martin Scorsese movie. And one of the gangs, the Irish gangs in that movie, is called Dead Rabbits. And basically, the idea was we all lived up in Harlem and were at the time Yonkers too, because that's where Sarah Lawrence is located. And all of the reading series that we knew of and that we had to travel to were down in Brooklyn, which is kind of like another state if you live in Westchester or Harlem, like Upper Manhattan. So they wanted to start a reading series for Harlemites and like Upper Manhattanites. So they started it, and because Devin was watching Gangs in New York, he called it Dead Rabbits. And so I was kind of like the mascot. Like, I was there every week. I would help hand out raffle tickets and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, people to this day kind of still think that, like, I founded that and I didn't. But I'm flattered by the assumption, I guess. But so, yeah, the series is basically poetry, nonfiction, creative nonfiction and fiction. And it just gained a lot of traction. You know, at first, I was one of the first. I was part of the first group of readers to read back in 2014 on September 15th, the same day that my book came out this year. And it kind of just went from there. It gained traction. A lot of people liked it. It started getting big names. People like Morgan Parker, Gabe Habash, Sergio de la Pava. I believe Hernan Diaz read there once. I might be totally wrong about that, but I'm a friend of Hernan's anyways, but his book just won the Nobel. And it kind of just blew up. So after a while, when a friend of mine from Seattle who had just quit working for Amazon, John, you know, our third business partner for Dead Rabbits, when he said to start a publishing company, I was like, yeah, we should just spin off Dead Rabbits, you know?
So do you feel like this is, I mean, I looked at the list of people who've read in the series. It's pretty lengthy. I admit, even though I read a lot of poetry and new fiction, there are a lot of people there I didn't know. Do you feel like the reading series and also your publishing is kind of grounded in the, you know, the kind of writers that you're of your age? I guess I want to put it, is it an age thing, or is it a more of a type of writing connections? Because you could look at it either way. You know, it's like a group of people who are of a similar generation or a group of people who are of a similar artistic attitude, or there could be another, you know, kind of driving ethos that gets everyone together. And I'm kind of curious whether there is one, in fact, you know, whether there's an artistic notionality or something else, or whether it's more situational, like in a sense, what you were talking about is geography, being on the Upper East Side. You know, is there some kind of organizing force behind the reading series and therefore also the press?
That's a good question. I, you know, right at the end there, you mentioned the press, and I would say I'm readily able to answer that question because we worked really hard on the mission statement. We know what we're trying to publish. And it's not just like a New York or this or that thing. For the reading series, I've actually never thought of it quite so specifically, but now that you ask, I would have to say it's more just the New York scene in general that bends a little, you know, more literary, I guess. I know that sounds very vague, but it's kind of true. And yeah, I guess maybe we see a bit more in the age range of like the upper 20s to low 40s, but it really has been people of all ages and all stripes, really. Like, I don't think there's any sort of demographic difference in who comes in and out of Dead Rabbits, but yeah, I would say it's just really representative of what New York literature is right now. And I guess the caveat I would add to that, to lend a little bit more maybe nuance to who we draw, is it is kind of we see a lot of people that are published with indie presses. And which isn't to say that, you know, we've had people with pretty big books come through and read. And that's definitely been true. But 9 times out of 10, I would say they're published and oftentimes unpublished, but or if they are published, it's with an indie press, which is because that's kind of what we're interested in. We're interested in more of what's kind of not being put out there with the bigger presses, because it's a little more risk-taking, it's a little more experimental, and what we believe is a little more falsely, I guess, eschewed from kind of the mainstream, just because those risks and those experiments are risks and experiments, and big houses have to make money. So yeah, I mean, that kind of bleeds into our mission as a press, but that's where it stemmed from the reading series. That's what we're interested in. And you know, which isn't to say that risk-taking and experimental is necessarily weird and obscure or like, you know, some sort of post-punk ideology like that, you know, though we welcome all of that stuff. it's really just, you know, you can see it in books like that are published with Coffee House. I don't know if you're familiar with Coffee House Press, but that's my favorite press in the world. They're still considered an indie press, even though, you know, tons of people in the industry know them. You know, Hernan Diaz, who I mentioned, whose book won the Nobel for In the Distance. You know, it won the Nobel, and that's an indie book, but it's a focused narrative. There's nothing feckless or, you know, or aimless or desultory about that experiment, but it isn't something that was published with a big press, a big five press, and there's a reason for that. So I know I'm not sure if that if that came out as crystal clear as I wanted it to, but yeah, I think that's the one. I think that's the one thing that divides the New York literary series, and I speak for a lot of series, not just Dead Rabbits, from mainstream literature, I guess I would say, is kind of indie publishing itself, which is why we spun off into the press in the first place, I guess.
Right. Well, so I guess, and maybe listening to you talk, I don't know whether I've maybe drawn the wrong conclusion. I thought that the books and the reading series were more closely connected, but it sounds like they're kind of loosely connected more so, and that the press is kind of like a development out of the series, the reading series, rather than directly a part of the same literary activity.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to say because, for example, you know, we've been calling it's been Dead Rabbits since 2014. And that's what, and you know, thousands of people in New York are familiar with Dead Rabbits through the series, and And that's why we called the publishing company Dead Rabbits, because we wanted to be associated with that same brand that we came up with, or, you know, especially Devin and Katie came up with back in 2014. But also more specifically, for example, a young woman, Annie Krabenschmidt, is writing a series of essays, a collection of essays for us. And we found her through the reading series. She was the first person that read that night. And I heard her read and I was like, okay, yeah, I got to talk to this person, you know? So yeah, you're right. It is sort of, they're not part like, you know, technically linked, I guess, all the way. But we also have a podcast, and, like, you know, that podcast is not monetized, but it's still our brand, you know, it's still our trademark. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of the lines are a little blurred there, but yeah, so it kind of all, it's like a symbiotic relationship, I guess, is the best way I can say it.
And of course, does anybody ever point out to you that Dead Rabbits, the original gang, was at 5 points pretty far away from where you are?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, relative to New York.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were, yeah, way down there.
Right. I know.
Yeah, we're aware of that. But you know what? Enough things have been appropriated away from Harlem, so.
That's true. So, well, and I think for people who are not familiar with New York, the geography is confusing. People don't, as you indicated early in our conversation, you know, if there are a lot of activity that goes on in Brooklyn, that actually does not attract people from Manhattan. Or similarly, I think, you know, I have some experience with the Poetry Project on the Lower East Side, where a lot of people don't come from other parts of Manhattan, even, because it's too far away. That New York, even though it's, it seems like a, I mean, it is not, geographically, it's not that gigantic, but, traveling from one end of Manhattan to the other, or from one borough to the other, is really, it's a commitment. So I think after a long, hard day of work and maybe some dinner, a lot of people don't come out to events that are in a different borough than the one they live in. Or like as your series is on a Sunday, you know, people may have brunch in Brooklyn. They're not traveling up to the Upper East Side. So I think if you are not a New York person, it's not clear how geographically segmented the city is.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's funny you mentioned that, because the fact that a lot of people from Brooklyn come to our series both verifies the, I guess, efficacy of the program that we're putting on, but also contradicts the entire founding mission statement that we wanted to create a series for people, you know, specifically in Manhattan. And of course, we welcome everyone from everywhere. But it is just a little ironic that so many of our readers still come from Brooklyn, because it kind of has become a hub of literary culture in its own, you know. But yeah, you're totally right. People come up and do our podcast up in Harlem, and they, the majority, I would say, live in Brooklyn. And by, you know, 8:30, 9, whenever we get done, they're like, all right, we got to head back, because, you know, it's, by the time we get back, it's going to be like bedtime, you know. Right. Even using the trains, especially depending where you are in Brooklyn, it's pretty much at least an hour to sometimes up to close to like 2 hours if you're deep into Brooklyn or Queens, from door to door. So yeah, New York is huge, I guess, is the take home message there.
So I think we should talk a little bit about the practicalities of being an independent publisher, being a startup. I think you've so far published one book, is that correct?
Yes. So my book is the first one we published. It's kind of the guinea pig. And we wanted to see what worked and didn't work, and kind of make sure that we ironed out all our details before bringing on other books. But yeah, we've got David Hollander's book coming out next in May. He was my former thesis advisor at Sarah Lawrence. He hasn't published a novel since 2001, I believe. And it was really well received. So we're incredibly excited about this, to kind of bring out someone who's kind of like almost Pynchon-esque, Thomas Pynchon-esque, like it seems like reclusive, but like, you know, to bring him back out of the woodwork because he's incredibly talented. And like I said, we got Annie's collection of essays. We're working on a children's book right now. And we're in talks with a couple other people about some books that we're really excited about. I'm not really at liberty to mention that because nothing's been finalized. But yeah, that's pretty much what we have on the docket so far.
So, you know, you mentioned Coffee House, which I am very familiar with. And of course, and I did, by the way, interview Alan Kornblum, who was its founder. If you want to listen to that interview, it's on my podcast site. And Alan was an old friend, but
I would be tremendously interested in that. That is my favorite press the business.
Well, so you talked about Coffee House, it sort of raises the question of economic structure. When Coffee House first started, actually it was originally Toothpaste Press and then Coffee House, it was just, you know, not a nonprofit. It was just an operation. Alan actually printed books to make a living, but they became more structured when they moved to Minnesota, and they realized that in order to survive in the long term, they needed to become a nonprofit. So they and several other publishers of that era transformed themselves into nonprofits, able to receive grants, able to receive donations, you know, functioning sort of like the way nonprofit theater does alongside profit-making theater. But a lot of small independent publishers have found over the years that creates a burden as well. You know, you have the overhead of having to be a nonprofit with a board of directors, and you have to file forms, and, you know, you have to go out and raise money as opposed to being a kind of low to the ground independent operation financially. So I'm just curious whether you have thought about that issue, whether you've grappled with, you know, kind of the long-term implications of being a small business. How are you thinking about the economics of being an independent publisher at this point?
Well, yeah, that was one of the first questions we asked ourselves. And because Jonathan Kay is kind of like the majority stakeholder relative to Katie and I and Dead Rabbits, we kind of deferred to him, but also agreed really that we wanted it to be a for-profit, just because, you know, Katie works for a nonprofit. She really understands the organizations, so it wouldn't have been a problem, you know, setting it up that way. She's all too familiar with working with a board of directors and raising money. You know, she could, if she was on the phone right now, she would, you know, probably be rolling her eyes. Just because it can be a huge burden. At the same time, we understood that the ability to go out there and just raise money would have been a huge asset to us. But then we would have been beholden to someone else. And in the end, it really came down to, regardless of for-profit, nonprofit, it's not really about the money. It's about we just wanted the independence. And obviously that comes with a great deal of risk. It does either way, you know, whether it's other people relying on you or us relying on ourselves. But yeah, we wanted to do things our way. And the three of us and a few people who help us out here and there, people that we consult with, talk to on a somewhat, you know, semi-consistent basis. But, you know, with the team being this small, we're just really efficient. And the burden can be big. You know, we've definitely felt overworked at times. And it's very difficult, especially with Katie and I having full-time jobs. But yeah, I think we prefer it this way, not having to answer to anyone else and being able to pick books how we want to and publish them how we want to. And sure, we might get some advice outside here and there along the way. Maybe that would be a little easier at times with a nonprofit structure. But, you know, in the end, we're still pretty confident about what we're doing. We got into this because we think our tastes are, I don't know, what's a modest way to put it, of note? I don't know. and we believe in our mission. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And we don't really want to sacrifice that focus. So that's how we ended up going with the for-profit. It really is about the mission.
Yep. No, it's, I think that makes sense. There, you know, the cost of being a nonprofit is quite high and, sort of ironically, you know, so
yeah.
Then the other question, I guess, that everyone will ask of any startup publisher is, how are you going to get the books out there? You know, what is your business model in terms of sales and marketing?
Yeah, so we've been learning a lot along the way. We've learned that marketing kind of trumps publicity as a small unknown, you know, relatively, you know, I don't want to say unknown because a lot of people know about us, but that doesn't necessarily translate immediately into book sales, because unless you're Penguin Random House, you know, you're not going to get a book landing on the, you know, in the New York Times and getting a review, you know, and even coffee houses had to fight their way to get their books to where they are now. So, you know, I just finished my first book tour. We'll probably plan another one. This time it's going to be a little more focused on what's worked and what hasn't. But in terms of, you know, the reason I say marketing kind of trumps publicity is because the book's been well received. It's been reviewed in a number of places and not nationally. And that's kind of the big problem. Unless you get a lot of the national notice, it doesn't really move the needle on book sales. So for us, it's really now we understand it as a real boots on the ground sort of campaign where we're heavily trying to invest in, especially time-wise, like, you know, because we want to get the data points before we really put money up for new ventures in terms of marketing specifically. But as you know, I mean, everything from personally messaging people to let them know that the book is out, you know, people that maybe I've been friends with for a long time, which can be a huge grind, but can also be really fun because you get to connect with, people that I haven't connected with in a long time, all the way to kind of, you know, figuring out Facebook digital, advertising and seeing how it reaches people, saving those data points and seeing how to reach people better. And pretty much everything in between. In the meantime, we've submitted my book for some awards, like such as the, you know, Young Lions, debut author award and, Penn Hemingway and things of that nature. And, so we're hoping that if we can get some of those, like maybe a short list or a long list, something like that, then that can boost the book sales, not just directly, but also in terms of selling the libraries and schools and universities and stuff like that. So a lot of it is, you know, in the beginning was kind of like, okay, let's try things and see what works. Now we're kind of getting to understand what works a little bit more directly, and it's kind of more of a matter of just implementing it. But yeah, I guess for other people out there who are starting an independent press, it's honestly just really a lot of hard work. There's really no magic fix, unless you get on Oprah's or Reese Witherspoon's book list, you know what I mean? Book club. It's a lot of, just figure like constantly researching new ways to get in here, get in there, and get the name out. And, you know, like anything else, we kind of just believe that over time, the more and more doors we knock on and more that open, you know, hopefully we'll hit some tipping point somewhere along the way. But in the meantime, you know, we're just having fun putting, you know, starting to put together books that we really enjoy, and just going from there.
So as a New York based publisher, where do you store your books?
Well, actually we're Seattle based technically.
Uh-huh.
John, the, our business partner, John Kay, he lives in New York. I mean, in Seattle. I was roommates with him in Seattle in my early 20s when we were both in our early 20s. And I moved back here, to the East Coast. I'm originally from near Baltimore, but I moved back to New York because to just specifically for, the MFA program at Sarah Lawrence. So, you know, storing books isn't a big deal because we don't do giant print runs. That's a cost that doesn't really make sense because, we print through Ingram, like most presses, like most indie presses, to be honest. And if let's say a bookstore that's going to hold our books, for example, I'm going to Book Culture after this tonight to sign some of the books that came in. Book Culture is a pretty well-known indie bookstore that's got a few locations in the city here. They just order through Ingram. You know, it's not like something comes through our quote unquote warehouse. You know what I mean? So it works a little differently, especially for indie publishers these days. And I would imagine for big publishing too, because I know for indie publishing, and I would assume it to a large extent, it's the same for big publishing, but, you know, with print on demand, especially, it's like we say, okay, we need this many books. We call it up and we know that we're going to sell them on the spot. So most of the storage we have in Seattle and New York are for stuff like readings. If I go to an event, something like that. So yeah, we've got a few boxes around, but it's nothing crazy.
No, that's one of the advantages of digital printing. You can scale your print runs to the print. Well, you can print any time, any quantity that you need. So that is an advantage that does make it a lot easier for, especially when you're beginning, when you have no idea how many copies you can sell or how fast you're going to sell them. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So do you have an idea of how many books you want to do each year, or is it just sort of at this stage print, do books when you find a good book to do, and, you know, don't make plans too far in advance?
I would say it's a little more of the latter. But I think ideally we'd like to get, it's a little more of the latter. But the salient point to add to that is that we do want to keep growing. So, you know, obviously it is totally, we're looking at the submissions we're getting or the people we meet with the manuscripts that we think we'd be interested in, et cetera. And it's kind of like, okay, if we're interested in the book, we'll pick it up. And so far that's been very manageable because, you know, we're only looking at about maybe, I think, a total of 6 books right now. If you know, 7, maybe if you count the ones that are potentials that we're going to acquire. But you know, in the long term, it's kind of impossible to say because we'd like to just keep growing as our network keeps growing. So yeah, it's more of a kind of just stay focused on the mission, you know, the mission statement, which is basically publishing the books that we want to publish and letting the rest speak for itself, and to focus more on, well, how are we going to get our books out there? Because the more books we take on, the more we expect of ourselves to get the books out there. And so we want to make sure that we're giving the books that we have on our shelves, you know, we want to make sure that we give them the proper attention they deserve. So I guess we're taking it slow, but we have no reservations about growing is the short answer.
No, fair enough. No, I think that it's always a question of, you know, scaling your ability and your desire or your capacity and your desire. You know, it sometimes is hard to juggle. You know, once you start going, more books come along and it becomes hard. You know, you can't, you want to be able to scale the effort for each one so you don't have too many books and not do a good job for each of them.
Yeah, no, you just hit the nail on the head. It's, and that was what we knew going in, and that's why we published my book first. Also because people thought highly of it, apparently. but yeah, also because we didn't want to use someone outside to kind of figure out exactly what worked and what didn't. And we've learned such a tremendous amount this past year that we already feel so much better about putting out David's book next and Annie's book and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, we're just going to continue to learn. And as we learn, we'll grow. And we kind of just see it as an organic process.
Do you see, and I guess maybe just one more question is, because I've noticed that you have, you know, you've got artists on your site, you have the podcast, you have merchandise and all this stuff. Is your idea to kind of be, to grow into all these different areas, is, you know, not just be a book publisher, but also to be able to do other things that are either spinoffs or related directly to the work that you're publishing?
Yeah, actually, yes. It's something we haven't really talked about since we started the company, because we're a long way from that. You know, we're not really ready to like syndicate anything else, so to speak. But yeah, the short answer is yes. Like we're definitely open to all of those things. But we're trying to, at this moment, we're staying focused on learning the business that we're currently invested in. But yeah. I mean, in the near future, I'm going to start my own YouTube channel. Whether you call it a booktube or it'll probably be a little bit more general than that. But yeah, we're definitely going to get into other forms of media at some point. We already have, obviously, like you said, with the podcast. And right now we're just not monetizing those things because we have an audience and it's pretty decent, you know. But I don't know, kind of like I hesitate to compare anything to Facebook for a lot of reasons, but as the founder of Napster in the movie The Social Network said, it's like kind of just not cool. We're not really interested in monetizing something. Like really at this point, like outside of the books themselves, a product that we're kind of more confident that has been completely curated and is justifiably something that we can sell.
No, fair enough. Well, I really appreciate us having a chance to talk together. We struggled a little bit to find a time to talk, but I'm glad it worked out. And I think it's really, I'm really interested in what you're doing. And I hope the people that are listening will take a look at deadrabbitsbooks.com and see what you're up to. And if you're in New York on a Sunday, maybe you can go hear one of the readers.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It's been great.
Well, thanks, Brian. This has been Publishing Talks. David Wilk, your host. I've been talking to Brian Birnbaum, one of the founders of Dead Rabbits Books.